Hey, Hannes, as you know, my book, Pit to LAX, My Story-Worthy Life, is coming, finally, March 25th.
March 25th, people. It's going to drop like it's hot.
I don't think they say drop with books, Hannes. Well, I think that's...
I'm trying to make books seem hipper, more like, you know, rap and the rock and the roll.
So listen, part of the book has to do about when I was a flight attendant. And right now on the phone, I have a friend of mine here, Hannes, Jody Roman. And she was actually one of my roommates in flight attendant training.
Yes.
Hi, Jody.
Hi, how are you?
We're great. Listen, tell people what you remember about training.
Oh my God, training. What a bunch of losers in that training class. Remember everybody sitting in the hallway and like studying like every dimension of the airplane,
yeah,
where the seats were located and every possible thing on the airplane, totally overload.
Like we were going to be flying the plane.
Yeah, like we were going to be flying the plane, exactly. We were just a bunch of monkeys.
And tell people why they'd kick people out of training.
Oh yeah, you're grooming. You gotta be very specific. You know, the weight, the hair.
You couldn't have earrings bigger than a quarter, and you had to wear a beige bra. And they would check.
Yeah, they would check.
Did the male flight attendants also have to wear a beige bra?
I think they do.
Oh, I think they should.
Oh, really? Sure.
Yeah,
I'm over
right.
the line.
You went too far.
Male flight attendants wearing women's undergarments.
Okay, so
that would never happen.
So listen, Jody, my book's coming out here March 25th. You'll be able to get it on Amazon. You can get it on the Kindle version, or I also did an audiobook, and there's two chapters about being a flight attendant, and I think I might mention you in there.
All right, that would be awesome. I'm really excited about your book.
You're very sweet.
Fucking fantastic, man. That is awesome.
Fan-fucking-tastic.
That is. That's a good blurb right there. Thank you so much, Jody. I sure appreciate you talking to us today.
Welcome.
Okay, bye. I also want to mention, folks, that my book release party is happening at Skylight Books in Los Feliz on Vermont on March 26th. That's Thursday, the day after the book comes out. And it's going to be a great time with special guests and lots of fun.
Story-worthy media. The best in story-driven content.
Hey, it's Flint. We gotta get out of here because Cobra's on their way, and I can't bring up the laser threat weapon system. So listen to Storyworthy. Yo, Joe!
Welcome to the Story-Worthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finn.
Welcome to Story-Worthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with...
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from Digital Parent Family Service Center in Palo Alto, California.
Whoa, what do they do up there?
I do digital parenting.
Digital parenting. So, like, they monitor the home and stuff like that?
It's not really clear to me exactly what digital parenting. There's a million. There's a digital parenting magazine. There's, like, I'm not sure as to whether this involves, like, you not seeing your kids or you telling your kids not to go
on
porn websites.
Well, there has to be parental involvement. I mean, it's not like they can't have a guardian.
Yeah, that's true. Well, people will learn via interactive classes and also participate in live webinars. Yes.
Webinar, huh?
Webinars. Sorry, webinars. Webinars. I'm an analog. If I were a parent, I would be an analog parent.
And we're coming from here tonight because our guest today, yes. Bill Ratner. Bill Ratner is here.
Bill Ratner. Isn't he the voice of Storyworthy?
He's not only the voice of Storyworthy, but he is the voice of so many other things. And trust me, folks, you have heard him.
He is the voice
over
of
the years.
Channel 2 News in San Diego, I believe.
Well, I don't think that's his biggest credit.
For me because it's so Ron Burgundy-esque.
By the way, I am
not trying to artificially lower my voice in voice envy of Bill Ratner. I just happen to have a cold.
All right.
I sound a little weird.
Here's the point. Bill Ratner has written a book, and it's called Parenting for the Digital Age. It just came out 2 months ago, and it's really a great collection of stories from his life because, you know, he grew up, like, completely in the business.
Yeah.
In terms of his father was an advertiser. So he's kind of
right.
had
and his,
advertising.
His uncle, I believe, was on I Love Lucy.
Yeah, and he's had radio and television kind of in his life forever.
Yeah.
But then has kind of broken off into his own thing as a voiceover artist.
And he's literally grown up with the media.
But here's the thing. Like, Bill Ratner, I respect him.
Wow. That's not going to make it for a good show.
Bill Ratner has a quality and education behind him.
I can tell you exactly what he has. I'm going to say it in my deepest Bill
Ratner-esque
voice.
What is it?
No. He has gravitas.
He could be the guy selling the, you know, I don't drink beer often, but when I do, I drink
Dos Equis.
Yeah, this could be Ratner. He's that smooth. He's that smooth.
Although right now he has in front of him his own coffee cup he brought in, which is pink. So that's not really shooting for the, you know, I could drink out of a black manly coffee cup, but I prefer a pink flowery one.
But he chooses his daughters.
Doesn't matter because he's a man.
Daughters.
He's the man.
Yeah, he could pull it off. That's the thing. Bill Ratner can pull it off.
Let's just say we're all thinking balls.
Honest, ask
big, giant brass balls.
Ask me how many moths Bill Ratner has won.
How many moths has Bill Ratner won?
Nine. Ask me how many I've won.
One?
Three. Oh. Dude, I've won a couple. But the point is he's won nine moths. You know how hard that is to do? That's like the odds.
Well, apparently harder than winning 10.
Well, I'll tell you, even to get on stage.
So you're saying he hasn't won double-digit moths. This is what I'm hearing. He's a single-digit winner of the moths.
Okay,
Jesus
so
Christ.
The topic he brings forth is from his book, Parenting for the Digital Age. And I read the book, and I mean, I get it in terms of this digital age. You know, my daughter.
Yeah, you used to just have to be.
She is all about the computer. She's all about the television. She always wants screen time. That's what she wants.
Right.
She wants to be in front of.
Put her to bed. You might read her a book, but then she likes to get her
iPad. Goes to the iPod.
And go, or iPod, yeah. And she'll just, you know, flip through things or play little games or whatever.
Yeah, she doesn't have an iPad yet, but boy, she sure wants one.
By the time she's old enough to have that, it will just be a pill that you swallow that installs the internet into your system.
No, if I could afford one, I'd buy her one right now. Of course I would. I mean, I think that there's so much to be gained from your child learning, you know, from a computer and
it's just
keeping
a matter
up.
It's just a matter of what, you know, they have all these restrictions where you're trying to keep them from things you don't want them to see. But that didn't work in the old days, in the analog days when, you know, like – now, if I had a 12-year-old boy, I'd be concerned how much pornography he could get to.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to sneak into my cousin's house and go to his vast pornography collection in a filing cabinet.
A filing cabinet.
We're organized. He was
that's
16.
That's old school, man.
He had a filing cabinet of 70s pornography.
Yeah.
And I saw it. And I don't know if my parents knew it existed. I don't know if anybody knew it existed. How they could miss an entire 5-drawer filing cabinet of pornography in a 16-year-old boy's room, I really don't know.
Well, maybe they didn't care.
Maybe they didn't care.
Yeah.
But they should have cared that I was going over there.
Well, here's the thing.
This is where I developed my desire. I'm sorry. Let's not
go ahead.
No. It's like, you know, the people. There's too much pubic hair removal these days. That's what I'm saying.
Honest
I'm old
is not
school.
Like a waxed vagina.
Well, it's not that I don't like it. Let's not go crazy. That's like saying you don't like chocolate. I'd prefer milk chocolate, but I'll eat the dark chocolate if I have to.
We went down a long road. Absolutely filthy. Maria.
By the way, dark chocolate is the name of Bill Ratner's most successful pornography site.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, listen. Here's the thing. Here's what I'm going to say about computers. The desire to be connected to other people is not going to go away. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So getting on the computer, you know, is a way of connecting. It's another way to be social.
Right.
That's why they call it social media. So if you're, like, for instance, I am very social. Therefore, it is not a surprise that I'm pretty good at social media. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
But it all requires a computer. I think that the whole thing with your children and computers and screen time, you know, first of all, there has to be a balance, right? I mean, if they can't sit still for, I'd say, 10 minutes without reaching for a device, maybe that's a problem.
Yeah.
But if it's not an addiction, I mean, an addiction is when they can't go without it. I mean, my daughter can also run out and play tennis and she's fine. So as long as there's a balance, but more so, I think it's that the parent needs to stay ahead of technology. Because if you let your kids switch, you know, fly by you in technology and you don't know what they're doing and you don't know how to keep up. You don't know how to monitor.
Right. They're literally on something that you don't know how to operate.
Then they are on a train out of hell.
Right.
Now, I mean?
Now the weird thing, you know, when your daughter is in high school, by that time, who knows what technology we'll be talking about. And unfortunately, she probably will be ahead of you. Whatever a 16-year-old in 10 years will understand, you will not get.
Oh, my gosh.
You won't get it. No.
I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no. Because, look, I'm 50 years old, and I'm keeping up. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm just saying a lot of people, like, after college, their musical taste stops. My brother still listens to Gordon Lightfoot. I mean, that's fine. I enjoy Gordon Lightfoot,
too. So what I'm hearing is you
hate
Canada.
People,
that's what I'm hearing.
Don't, you know, they don't keep moving with the times.
No,
they
no, no.
Stay with
I got
music
how
patterns.
You're unbelievably hip. We all understand.
Oh,
let me just
yeah,
say
that's
this.
What
hang
I was getting
on, hang
at.
On. You're 50 years old, and you're keeping ahead of a 7-year-old.
She's 8, and I'm
she's
49.
Eight. Sorry, she's 38.
Is...
I apologize. Boy, you've been saying you're 50 years old for 3 years, so it wouldn't be a shock when it happened. And now, suddenly, you're like, hey, bitch. Now, all right, you're 49 years old, keeping up ahead of an 8-year-old. When you are 59, trying to keep ahead of a...
She'll be 18.
She'll be 18. Are you going to keep ahead of an 18-year-old when you're 59?
I better.
Okay.
I don't know. No, no. I hear what you're saying. I'm just saying I think that's when things could shift if you as a parent aren't aware of what they're capable of.
Yes, it's true.
Okay, good.
And this
we're
is
agreeing.
Why, but I think that they'll always run from us in a way. It's like young people are deserting Facebook like it's the Titanic because
right.
all their parents and grandparents and aunt and uncles are on there putting up pictures of them in diapers and their caps. So Facebook has basically just become like a middle-aged, like, you know, social club.
Right.
Where we all go at 4 o'clock and have an early bird dinner and then, you know, look at pictures of cats and you play some Monster Busters and you go to bed.
That should be the name of your first album, Hannes, Early Bird Dinner.
Early Bird Dinner. I'm actually going to put an album on a 78 vinyl.
I think that
I'm
might go over very
school.
Well.
By the way, records are coming back. Have you heard this?
Well, records have been coming back for like years.
No, I know, but it's like a niche thing now.
Yeah, but it's more than that because MP3s, the quality is horrible on an MP3. So if you want a good, rich sound, you got to go vinyl.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, listen.
You got to go vinyl is Bill Ratner's second most popular porn site. You gotta,
Hannes,
if you want a rich sound.
All right, you guys, our storyteller's on his way up here, but I did want to mention before Bill begins his story that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great. Am I right?
No, that would be terrible. I'm trying reverse psychology.
I have created.
For God's sakes, don't help us.
I have created a brand new empire, as I've told you.
An empire,
Storyworthy Media.
So you are the William Randolph Hearst.
Head on over to StoryworthyMedia.com.
StoryworthyMedia.com.
That's right. You'll hit our publishing company. You'll also hit the podcast, the game show, and our consulting company that I've created. And so head on over there and browse around. And then once you hit the StoryworthyPodcast.com, that page.
Yep.
Then we get into the Amazon thing and the Patreon thing.
You can get a Patreon thing. People are helping us out, and we love that you're helping us out.
Isn't that nice?
We really do appreciate
that. It's a good feeling. People are writing us more and more, and we're getting some great reviews, and people are contributing to Patreon. So we're thrilled.
It's all positive, ladies and gentlemen. By the way, I do have a suggestion that we need, of course, if we're going to make real money on the internet, we need to have a subsidiary, which will be Worthy Pornography.
Oh,
that's the only way to really make
it. Is that what you think? Okay, you head up the Worthy Pornography department.
All right, fine.
All right, you're in charge of that.
Bill Ratner has any tips for me.
All right, folks, wherever you are, stick around because Bill Ratner is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer-comedian Jennifer Valley.
And I'll be talking about the time I joined the gang.
That's next time on Storyworthy.
Hi, this is Yakov Smirnov. In America, you listen to Storyworthy. In Russia, Storyworthy is you.
And we're back. We have left digital parenting and gone to the campus of Stanford University. We're hanging out now talking to kids, and they're saying their parents have no idea what they're doing digitally. They're telling us that when they were 16... they were in these video clubs, so do video virtual orgies around the world. It was frightening.
Oh, my gosh. Well, listen, I think Instagram seems very popular, and Vine seems very popular.
And Vine is popular. I'm actually, among the youngsters I work with, I'm very famous on, no, it's not Vine, it's in some yeah, other, some other
fine, Vine, and there's another one because
they'll always they come up to me and they ask me something and I tell them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah, that's
and
fine.
And the kids love to watch me tell them to go fuck themselves.
Well, so. Who doesn't?
Who doesn't, exactly.
All right, you guys, Bill Ratner's here right now. He is the author of the new book, Parenting for the Digital Age, The Truth Behind Media's Effect on Children and What to Do About It. All right, as you guys know, Bill is not only the voice of Storyworthy, but he's also one of Hollywood's top voiceover artists, narrating documentaries for places like Discovery and History Channel, The Travel Channel. He's also the computer game voice of Ambassador Donald Udina in Mass Effect 1, 2, and 3. Do you know that game?
2 is fantastic. 3 is iffy.
Oh, get out of here.
I could barely play chess.
He's also the voice of Flint in the TV cartoon G.I. Joe.
Yes.
He's on Robot Chicken, Community, you know, and
our friend Joe Slepsky, who helps us out occasionally.
Yeah.
He when he first came, the first day he came, he met Bill Ratner. He was like, he's like,
yeah, he almost lost it.
He's a real comic nerd.
Yeah,
real,
he was way into
like,
it.
Flint, he was gonna fucking faint. He's 6'8" tall,
yeah.
Bald, built like a fucking tree. He's like, oh my god, oh my god, it's hilarious.
Bill has published stories, and he can be heard on National Public Radio's Good Food, The Business, and Strangers. And like I said, he is a 9-time winner of the Moth Story Slams. You can find him at BillRatner.com.
And that's where the real money is, being a Moth Story Slam.
And also on Twitter at Bill Ratner. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Bill Ratner.
I am also the voice of Storyworthy. This is the best story show I've ever heard since, I don't know, Saturday or so. It's been great, you guys. I changed my teeth for the show. They're just not quite working.
The top and the bottom still seem to go.
Let me just slap my face. Seems to be a lot better. Thank you. Thank you for all that. Can I go now?
Go ahead, please.
Do I need a key for the... I'm sorry. Excuse me. Thank you. Thank you for having me. You guys look so much younger than you did when I was at when I went and met you at your parole officers.
No way.
Yeah. Such a nice woman, too. Let you guys out to do this show. I love it. Christine just held up my book, Parenting for the Digital Age, The Truth Behind Media's Effect on Children and What to Do About It. And here is the sound of my book. Here is the sound of two books hitting spine to spine. Just to give you a sense of that old analog.
This is analog.
Kind of non-recycled, but recyclable thing. You could take 600 copies of this book, take them to the recycler, get absolutely nothing for it, but know that you are doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So my story has to do with sort of a subject. I mean, it is the subject of this book. When I was 5 years old, and this is one of the stories in the book, my dad had bought us a new television set. My dad was an advertising guy. It was 1953. No, it was 1952. Let's get this right. And everybody on our block was buying a television set. You know, GIs were back from World War II, and the economy was booming, and about 1 out of 2 Americans had a TV set in their house. My dad bought an RCA Victor 17-inch model MT-122, and it was a great big thing in a beautiful wooden cabinet, and he put it in the middle of the living room and showed me how to work it. This is on, this is off. Son, don't get too close or you'll burn your eyes right out of your head. And that was the end of my instruction. So I came home from kindergarten, turned on WHO, which was Ronald Reagan's first job in Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, this is the future president of the United States of America. He was a sports announcer on WHO. But it was the afternoons, they had kids kept programming on. And it was Mr. Bob, who worked for the railroad. Railroad Bob, we'll be right back after this word. And a voice comes on and said, this commercial message will be 60 seconds long. And I held my breath. I went, 60 seconds? And a 1953 Oldsmobile snakes across the screen with a happy family of four waving out the window. And I kept holding my breath and I was turning blue. And I went, 60 seconds is a minute. And this was a huge realization for me as a 5-year-old. Many of the 4-year-olds in the block already knew this, but... I ran into the kitchen where my mom was. I said, Mom, I know what a minute is. 60 seconds.
And I had a sense of what it was from this family driving around in circles doing donuts in a 53 Oldsmobile in this commercial on WHO. And she said, oh, honey, that's great. Did you learn that in kindergarten? And I said, no, no, the man on TV told me. Oh, Railroad Bob? And I said, no, no, this man was invisible. She said, oh, the announcer. I said, the announcer? What's the announcer? And she said, well, that's the man who says things like, this commercial message will be 60 seconds long. So from that point on, I became obsessed whenever the television set was turned on with the invisible voices. Palmolive, the soap of the future. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. And on and on and on. Because these were the guys with power. Not the silly actors who were paid scale to get on there and hold a candy bar or stick their spoon in a bowl of cereal. It was the voices that had power. And one day I was burning the philodendron or something. My mother was irritated with me. She put a jacket on me and stuck me out on the back stoop of our house. And I fished in my pocket, and I had this little tiny plastic box that my father had given me when he had emptied it out of his Gillette razor blades. This is not a story about suicide. And it was a little bright blue plastic box with a tiny little metal tip sticking out of it that was part of the Gillette assembly. And to me, it looked like a walkie-talkie that I must have seen on an episode of Highway Patrol. And I put it up to my lips and stared at the sky and found myself saying, I'm talking to you out there. Does anybody hear me? And I had begun to internalize the power of these guys, these announcers. Cut to about 6 months later, we moved from Des Moines to Minneapolis, and my favorite television show was on at about 5 p.m. And it was a live marionette show out of Chicago, Fearless Fosdick, who was a minor character in the Dick Tracy comic strip, Detective Fearless Fosdick. But in this show, with the strings glinting and the stage lights, was Fearless and his girlfriend Eunice Pimpleton, and always the bad guys, who would always shoot at Fearless, point blank range, with 38 guns that were, you know, in the hands of a 26-inch marionette, would sort of kind of herky jerky, and they would blast him in the chest. The marionette live would pull open his coat, and there would be smoking bullet holes in his chest, literally. These are the effects that they created for little children on television in the early 50s. Needless to say, this was the greatest television show in the history of mankind. And after Christmas Vacation, of course, I went back to kindergarten. And I wasn't repeating kindergarten. I just went back for the next semester. And Fearless was off. And I freaked out. It was Spin and Marty, which I hated, these two little waspy blonde fellows who rode horses in the West. I didn't care about that. I wanted crime and bad things to happen in my show. And I said, Dad, where's Fearless Fosdick? And he said, well, son, I don't know. Let's look at the TV listings. And he grabbed the Minneapolis Star and said, oh, son, I'm sorry. It looks like they took it off the air. And I said, what do you mean took it off the air? It was the best show on TV. He said, son, remember what I'm about to tell you. There is no accounting for quality in television. And suddenly my dad rose up in a puff of smoke, wearing oxide sandals and in an ancient Greek robe, and said, son, you and I are for sale. We're consumers. We're TV watchers. And if they can sell enough of us to the advertiser, the show stays on the air. If not, it goes away. You'll probably never see Fearless Fosdick again. Well, I was devastated. And I didn't even believe him. I went back the next day and the next day, and needless to say, Fearless never returned. They produced about 13 episodes of Fearless Fosdick. And the only way that I could be consoled was when they took me to my Aunt Eunice and Uncle Jerry's house in near north side of Chicago and knew that I was really, really interested in media. And so my Aunt Eunice took me to the Allerton Tip Top Tap Hotel just off Michigan Avenue in the Great White Way to see the Don McNeil Breakfast Club. And she takes me in at 9 o'clock in the morning to this ballroom with about 200 middle-aged ladies in great big silly hats. It was the 1950s. And I thought, what am I doing? I'm dressed wrong. I was wearing a suit. I wasn't wearing, like, you know, a cocktail dress like these women were. And this is the audience for Don McNeil. Don McNeil was this fat, balding, middle-aged guy with the voice of the gods. Welcome to the Don McNeil Breakfast Hour, brought to you this morning by GE. Look, ladies, and he would gesture to one of 100 stainless steel items made by GE or Bridge-O-Matic or things that would make your kitchen great. And he just hummed and droned and sang his way through 30 minutes of network radio, the longest running broadcast entity of any history of any television or radio show in the history of broadcast, the Don McNeil Breakfast Hour. I fell in love, not with Don McNeil personally, but with his voice and with this mesmerizing power. Not only were 200 women sitting there just damp under the armpits, listening to Don sell them, Vegematics and toaster ovens, but millions of people were listening to him every single morning. Cut to Hollywood, California, in the fall of 1983. We're at a recording session for Hasbro's G.I. Joe, produced by Sunbro Productions. In walks the great Chuck McCann. Now, Chuck McCann was an interesting figure who made one film in his life called The Projectionist, starring Rodney Dangerfield as the head of the Usher squad. All right, you guys, line up. You look like hell. What a bunch of idiots. Look at it. Hey, salami face. Get your uniforms straight. I got no respect at all. Now, that was Rodney. Chuck McCann played The Projectionist because that's what he did for a living. He showed old movies on television. And I was talking to my friends about TV. And I said, you know, do you guys ever see Fearless Fosdick, the greatest show on television? And they said, people were sort of blinking at me, not knowing. And this huge, beefy Irish hand comes down hard on my shoulder. I look up. It's 6'4" Chuck McCann. And he says, Fearless Fosdick? And I said, yeah, it's the most incredible show on TV. You ever see it? See it. I made Fearless Fosdick. I made Rudy Kazudi. I made more puppets than any puppet maker in early 50s television in the history of the medium. And I said, oh, my God, I couldn't. This is like, this was more than deja vu. This is like dying and going to heaven. And I said, you don't have any photos of Fearless Fosdick. He said, I have Fearless Fosdick in my basement. And I have Rudy Kazudi. I have over 250 puppets and lights and the stage all set up in my basement. I got down on my knees and I said, Chuck, is there any way that I could possibly come over and just see Fearless in your puppets? He said, no problem, Ken. Gives me a card. In the ensuing days, I called and called and called. He never returned my call, ever. I mean, I called like first every day, then once a week, then once a month for a year. He hadn't died. He just wasn't returning my calls. I ran into the great Lorenzo Music, who's the voice of Garfield the Cat. Oh, it's Garfield the Cat. And told him the story. And he said exactly the same thing happened to him. That Chuck was hoarding Fosdick, Rudy Kazudi, and all the rest. And my dad was right. I never would see Fearless Fosdick again. And the moral of the story is, buy my book, Parenting for the Digital Age,
yes,
by Bill Ratner from Familiar Colors.
It's a fascinating story because your whole life really, did you ever even think of another path for your world?
No, never.
You just always assumed that you would be in this medium. That's it.
Yeah.
You're always going to use your voice.
I subscribed to radio and TV magazine when I was 12 years old.
But what about the idea of becoming a talk show host in terms of, you know, reaching out to the nation as you, personally, the man?
My problem is I am way too good looking for that medium.
I see.
So intimidating to people.
He does not have a face for radio.
Right. You've always just wanted to, but you, yeah, I mean, what's the...
Always. There's something about... what was it? There's a movie, An Unmarried Man or something, and this guy's about to divorce his wife, and he's in bed with her, and he goes, I don't know, honey, I just sometimes think about moving to Nevada and becoming a disc jockey. And I thought, yeah, well, me too, dude.
Yeah.
Who was that guy who had the Art Bell?
Yeah,
in a radio show.
Reynard Bell radio show. Absolutely.
And wasn't he in the shack somewhere in New Mexico?
He was in Area 54.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Big sci-fi guy.
Or Studio 54. I don't know. I'm not sure.
No, it's probably
Area 51. I was gonna say
the, I love the Chuck McCann. I know who Chuck McCann is.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's a big guy. He used to be on the Tonight Show all the time in sketches, I think.
Yes, and he played Leatherneck, the voice of Leatherneck on G.I. Joe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Before I forget, I'm sorry, the G.I. Joe thing. I didn't quite realize until I was just doing a little research here that you did the voice of Flint again in an episode of Community.
You know,
this past year,
the Community,
where they had
which
a fantasy where they went back into the G.I. Joe show,
and they brought us back from the grave, almost literally.
Oh, that's awesome!
I mean, did they? I want to know how they did. They call you? They called your agent? Did they know who to look for?
Well, what precedes this was Seth MacFarlane of Family Guy calling my agent and saying, "Is the guy who did the voice of Flint in G.I. Joe still alive?"
Right
literally.
On. Yeah.
And the agent goes, "Yes, he is still alive. He walks on both feet." And so they put Flint in Family Guy, then they put Flint in Robot Chicken.
Met Seth MacFarlane?
On the phone.
And is he who are some of your idols right now? Because I love Seth MacFarlane. I mean, in terms
Hannah
of voice.
Finney, I'd say, just off the top of my head.
So true.
Christine Blackburn.
Yes.
I mean, who else is there? Marlon Brando, but he's dead.
Come on now.
Robert Duvall should win an Oscar for this sappiest movie in the world.
If they couldn't hire you, if they couldn't afford you, and your entourage, there are 35 people here right now.
They're all dead.
Who would you want them to hire after
really,
you?
Hal Rail. How about Hal Rail?
Hal Rail would be a good option if you wanted like a, sort of a, like an infantile Bill Ratner sound.
Okay.
Sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, well, let's go back real quick. I asked you, have you never had a desire to be a talk show host where, in other words, you would reach out as yourself, Bill Ratner,
no,
in a
Gene
helpful
Shalit
way?
Was the only, because I was a movie critic for a while on the radio, and Gene Shalit is the only person who I've been sort of jealous of, not only his hair,
like his career,
but he had his huge Jufro.
Yeah, he was like a
giant mustache,
like
and
Gabe
enormous
Kaplan,
80s glasses,
right? Mm-hmm. And he would go on.
That was a look.
Network TV, but no, I'm too paranoid to want to have anybody see me.
But no, I'm not talking about, I'm talking about radio.
Radio talk show. Talk radio is so idiotic and stupid.
I see.
Al Franken was right.
And he said.
About the big fat meathead. And talk radio.
What did Al Franken say?
What was the name of his book?
Oh, you mean when he about Rush Limbaugh?
Rush Limbaugh's big fat idiot. I mean, all those guys, even the liberals, even Michael Jackson, the Englishman, and even Al Franken's show that I wanted to happen on Air America was just, they just didn't get it. They just ramble.
They feel like they have to pick, I think people are complicated. I think people are, like I'm generally liberal, but every once in a while I'll be conservative just out of nowhere. It's like, but these guys have to pick a side and stick to it no matter
what. They're giving a character.
They have no
character.
Right.
But they're one-dimensional characters.
I know, but their audience wants to hear
their
side. The same.
It's like the once worst 30-second political commercial stuck on an old LP record.
But what about
we feel that America?
I know, but wait a minute. What about like Tim Conway Jr.? I listen to him every single day.
He's okay. I listen to Terry Gross.
Terry Gross.
Yeah. Hannes Finney, Christine Blackburn.
I
like Mark Maron actually, because Mark Maron is so smart and so neurotic and funny.
I love him. Yeah.
I listen to him.
Okay,
but very few others.
I was just curious. Let's talk about parenting for the digital age for a second.
Thank you.
What?
One thing I found fascinating about your book is that you go toward the end and you actually interview your daughters and talk about their experience because, they've lived it. Your kids are like in their mid-20s now, so they really were in that part of history where there was very little social media,
messaging.
And now there's a whole lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And so tell us a little bit about your daughter's experience.
We had, the books, The Babysitter's Club. I know Hannes is right. I saw one in his briefcase.
That was a different thing. It said Babysitters number 4.
Right,
that
was a number 6 take. Is really the best one, but we'll talk about that later. We had a babysitting co-op in our neighborhood. My kids were little, and it was a lot of fun on Saturday nights. We decided to do an experiment after the kids nearly mauled each other violently to get at little 6-year-old Gabe's Game Boy.
Mm. Yeah,
and he brought his digital toy to babysitting co-op, and we thought, let's ban it. And everybody agreed: no cell phones. We'll just watch a video for an hour. They'll play. We'll have fun. We'll read to them. They'll go to bed. And it was an incredibly successful experiment for 12 years. And then I got into the business and had so much fun, and then realized my kids were watching so much TV and so many videos that it was problematic. So I had an electric switch installed in the basement that turned off the entire entertainment center, and my kids would scream and yell and call the repairman. Honey, I lost his number. Or, he just won't call me back. And this book is for people who I have the most sympathy for, which is the young mom and or dad who is looking at the child who was once this beautiful, squishy, wonderful little person that loved them and adored them and needed them and now needs nothing but the digital device. Give me the iPhone or I'll go into another tantrum. I know I just turned 21, Mom, but I still hate you. So kids at age 2 are being handed iPhones and iPads because they work, because the kid will shut up. The kid won't scream in the dentist's office. And then the kid becomes hooked. These are the most addictive devices and software in the history of mankind. Steve Jobs was interviewed just months really before he died by a New York Times writer who said, gee, Mr. Jobs, who's doing a profile on Jobs, your house must be the most amazing place in the world for your kids. You had a large brood of young kids. And he said, well, quite the contrary. My wife and I banned digital devices in the home.
Oh, get out of here.
And you can read about this. It's really fascinating. Just Google Steve Jobs.
Banned digital devices in his home.
And so this writer took
it. Better than the weapons manufacturer. How dangerous guns are.
Exactly. Yeah. So the writer took a whole new tack and decided to interview CEOs and CFOs of top Silicon Valley software and hardware makers. And they all said the same thing. And they didn't want to talk much about it because they know that just exactly as Philip Morris knows that there are addictive elements in tobacco, and Hershey's knows there are addictive elements in their light milk chocolate. All the manufacturers of digital devices know how incredibly addictive for both adults and children these devices are.
There's a huge difference between an addiction and a preference. I mean, if a child,
I have a preference for an iPhone, but I'm an adult. Between the age of 5 and 17 has a few thousand hours to learn how to look somebody in the eye, to learn how to apply for a job, to learn how to read, to learn how to sing. And if they've got their face 8 inches away from a digital device because their parents decided to stick it in their face in order to keep them from screaming,
yeah,
they're going to be like the little chimpanzee with a terry cloth mother.
Yeah, but
and
I
the
don't
light bulb inside.
That's...
Remember that experiment? You know, the chimpanzee is not raised by a real.
That was in Babysitters 5, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, but Ratner,
and then
that's
they get put in. They get
says.
Put in the cage with the rest of the champions and become psychotic.
But that's not what your book says. Your book says moderation.
Moderation, as the Maharishi said to the Beatles.
Well, no, I'm telling you. I mean, I don't understand. So right now, you're telling me no electronic devices, and I read your book, and it says moderation.
So here's how you do moderation. Parents, who are the ones this book is written for, have to sit down with their kids and say, "How do we? Honey, what do you think we should do?"
Yeah.
And the kid will say, "Oh, well, maybe we should keep the phones in the kitchen and charge them in the kitchen, and then my friend Bob, his mom makes him do homework in the living room." This book is full of ideas from brilliant parents I interviewed about how to save. If you're a 26, 28-year-old parent with a kid and you're beginning to watch that kid sort of pull into him or herself and just sort of live through a digital device, this book is for you because it discusses how can you.
Yeah, see, then you're not doing it. Now, Christine, I'm going to compliment you, so hang on.
Oh, good. I can't wait.
Nice coat. Okay, that was it. No, you do moderation with your
daughter. My daughter, yeah.
You do. You know, it is part of, but it's like, okay, you've got another 20 minutes, then you're going to bed, you're going to watch one show, you're going to go, you know, it's not just like, just go in the other room and
well,
disappear.
Well, listen, it's always about parental involvement. I mean, a child sitting in front of Sesame Street will learn one thing if they're alone sitting in front of Sesame Street. Yeah. But if the parent is with them and interacting while they watch the show Sesame Street, they're going to get a lot more. So it's always about parental involvement. I mean, obviously, an iPad is not a babysitter. And if people treat it as such, if it wasn't the iPad, it would be something else.
Well, it used to be a television.
That's what I'm saying.
Radio,
in other words, this is about parenting, I think, more than the device itself. Because if possible, I think everybody in the world should have an iPad.
I agree.
That's what I think.
It is about parenting, but for parents, it's the hardest thing in the world. If you find something that works to shut your kid up,
parenting is hard. Period.
Yeah, then you're going to get addicted to it. And we are not told. We are in the dawn of the digital age. People have no idea what an excessive amount of time in front of digital devices.
The ramifications are.
I'm not talking about cancer of the brain.
We don't have stats,
Christine, I think that you're thinking most people are somewhere along where you're going. But I think that a lot of people are just completely ignoring their kids. I just have one thing I got to say. I know we got to wrap it up. That I just realized that when I was babysitting Alabama a couple of weeks ago, you have this fancy, the Apple TV?
Yeah.
So we ended up interacting probably more than we would have because she had to – I, of course, had no idea how to operate
it. She educated you as to how
to use it. Yeah, she completely was like, well, no, you do this and you do this. And she's pulling up the thing. I'm like, okay, I got it. And she's like, I'm like Lenny from Mice and Men. Tell me about the rabbit.
Here's the only thing wrong with that scenario. Okay. There's a woman I interviewed in the book, a dear friend who teaches new media at Northridge, Cal State Northridge. And she said in order for her kids to earn screen time, she had them study computer programming for kids.
Yeah.
And so they were able to lift the hood. And rather than just learning how to operate the device that ultimately is there to hypnotize you, these kids ended up learning how to get in underneath the hood of the device and figure out how to program
a computer game. People are smarter than ever, and I'm all for it. I mean, I'm like onward and upward, progress, move forward. My daughter takes typing class. So at seven years old, she was taking typing so that she can learn how to type on the computer.
Right. Once the apocalypse comes and electricity goes away, that's going to be very valuable.
Hey, Ratner, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Yeehaw!
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the storyworthy wheel of truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Passport. Oh, this is a painful story. 60 seconds long. A friend of mine was turning 50 years old. For his 50th birthday, he decided, I'm going to invite all my best friends to come to the south of France to a beautiful mansion that he rented and to share with a dozen of his best friends, including me and my wife and children. So we check our passports, and I say to my wife about 9 months before, I said, gee, I think Miranda's passport expires about 6 months after. Oh, okay, we'll get it. And I thought, I fulfilled my responsibility. I told my wife. She fulfilled her responsibility. She acknowledged my telling her. Cut to the day that we depart. We're all excited. We've been packing for days. We're going to the south of France. This is this 200-year-old exquisite mansion surrounded by fields of lavender with a beautiful concrete swimming pool built in the 19th century. The best friends of the world gathering. We get to the airport, we hand him our passports, and he says, I'm sorry, this little girl's passport has expired. My wife says, you were supposed to get the passport. I said, no, you were supposed to get the passport. And then she says, I'm not staying behind. And my oldest child said, I'm not staying behind. My youngest child, whose passport had expired in my pocket, burst into tears. Daddy, I want to go to France. And I said, yeah, me too, honey. How about Disneyland?
Hey, wait, what happened?
Well, you can go to a passport expediter. And we had
airport?
No. I went and I pounded on the door of the feds in Westwood and said, please, my daughter, can't you see? She's going to say, Sarah, I don't know, you can't. Get out of here. Next. So we went to a private passport expediter.
So your wife, they went ahead?
They flew. Bye-bye.
Oh, my gosh.
Bye-bye. Oh, no.
They left.
No kidding.
Oh, no. They
left.
They split. Yeah, they split.
And then you and your younger daughter had to go.
We went to the feds. We then finally went to a passport expediter.
How old was she at the time?
She was like 9.
Oh, my goodness.
And then we went to Disneyland.
Oh, you're such a good dad.
Stayed in the California
hotel. Such a good dad.
And had a great time. And then ultimately flew to France for the last day.
I have a dream of doing that. You know, when I hit a milestone, whether it be 50
your husband 60. Or your youngest child behind. It's like, I'm going to France.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
But I'm renting, like renting a villa in France or something and having and being able to fly all my friends. You know what I mean? I think that being wealthy, the best part would be taking
no matter
friends
how
on
wealthy
trips.
We had been.
Oh, I would love that.
The moral is check the expiration date on your passport.
Oh, yeah, no
and
doubt.
And sometimes, even if it's 6 months past the departure date, sometimes the Americans can say, I'm sorry.
You can't buy your expiration date. You
no.
know what I mean? You can't buy that kind of there's certain things, no matter how much money you make, you're waiting in line with everybody else.
As Hannes Finney says, when the apocalypse comes, make sure your passport is up to date.
That's true. That's true.
Hey, listen, we can't thank you enough for coming today. So really, your message at the end of the day in Parenting for the Digital Age is...
Buy the book.
Buy the goddamn
the
book.
Age.
That's what it is.
From Familias Publications.
Familias Publications.
Yeah.
And of course, it's on Amazon. You also recorded the audiobook.
Yes,
and it's
ma'am.
On Kindle. So there's three ways to get the book.
At Barnes & Noble, Target...
Everybody, you guys.
Wherever good recycling bins are found.
Well, this is a very hot topic, parenting in the digital age. And, you know, people are interested.
Thank you.
Right on, man.
I love you guys.
I love you
we
too,
love
Bo Ratner.
You,
all right, you guys,
Flint.
On behalf of everybody here at Sideshow Network, especially Sean Merrick and Maria Spertolozzi, who helps us every single week with our sound. Thank you, Maria. And of course, on behalf of John Thomas Griffith, thanks for helping us out with the theme song. And you know, Bill Ratner is here. Not only is he our storyteller, but I want to thank you personally for being our announcer. Thank
the
you, sir.
This is Story Worthy.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story worthy week.
You can follow me, follow me. I'll take you down to the river. Follow me, follow me. I'll keep you safe.
Thanks for joining us on the Story Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.